Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Seventh Turn Congregation outside the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is October 5, 2024. It is the third day of Bull 28. We're going to start our first service on this seventh day Sabbath with the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2 of the Shepherd's Rod. And we're on page 91. We're going to be dealing with the leopard-like beast. Okay. Is the name of our sermon. The leopard-like beast, 2 Shepherd's Rod, page 85, 50 Hotter. That's the name of our sermon, the leopard-like beast, Revelation 11, 1-7. For the non-descript beast, Daniel 7, representing Rome and his first stage, shows prophetically by his 10 horns that there were 10 kings to arise out of Rome. And his second stage, it is shown that the papacy was to arise and subdue 3 kings. That was during the Dark Ages, from 538 to 1798 A.D. And wear out the saints of the Most High. And that's the saints that were following the apostolic Nazarene doctrine of the sanctuary system restored. Saints of the Most High for the space of 1260 years. But it tells not of the fall of the Roman monarchy or the papacy. It is silent concerning the Reformation that came before or after 1798 A.D. Therefore, the lack of information about the symbols of the beast must be found somewhere else in the prophetic word of Yahweh, for this must be sought in the book of the Revelation, for it is a complement unto Daniel's prophecy. The leopard-like beast of Revelation 13:1-10 is the only symbolical prophecy that tells of the fall of the Roman monarchy, the crowning of the 10 kings, the wound of the papacy, the reformation and rise of the Protestantism, and the captivity of the Pope. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Revelation 13:1. Note, this beast has the same number of the horns as a nondescript in his first stage, Imperial Rome. Daniel said the 10 horns on the beast representing Rome are the 10 kings that shall arise. Daniel 7:24. For the horns symbolizing the Roman world in its imperial state, she pointed forward to the time when the empire would be divided into 10 parts. Our kingdom. In other words, while the horns primarily represented the Roman world in its imperial form, that's back at the cross, they secondarily denote the present world in its divided state. Since the fall of Rome, corresponding with the 10 toes on the great image of Daniel 2, the nondescript beast in his first stage has 10 horns, as in his second stage, the little horn came up, and three of the ten were plucked up by the roots. It denotes that they can never be reinstated as king, for the horns being reduced to the biblical number seven signified that the papacy was to have complete sway over the entire world as far as the Christian church is concerned. In other words, as far as the Jewish church is what he's trying to say here. Therefore, the ten horns on the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13:1 cannot signify that the three uprooted ones have assumed their authority the second time. As the same number of the horns appear on each succeeding beast, namely the nondescript, Daniel 7:7, the leopard Revelation 13:1, and the scarlet color Revelation 17:3, representing the entire New Testament era, it is evident by the facts gathered that the number of the horns are intended to denote universal, as they are absent from the beast of the Revelation 13:11-18. It verifies the fact that the two-horned beast denotes a local system. Therefore, it is unquestionably clear that the fixed number of the horns, 10, are designed to universally symbolize the people and government. Follow the chart on page 84. Inasmuch as the lion, the bear, the four-headed leopard, and the lion, the script beast, the symbols of Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome, are linked unto each other. The unbreakable chain of the beasts make it impossible for another universal beast system to intersect their consecutive order. Consequently, the leopard-like beast of the Revelation 13:1-9 must follow the nondescript beast of Rome, Revelation 13:2-3. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. The composition of the beast reveals the fact that he is a descendant from the four beasts before him. The mouth of a lion, the feet of a bear, the body of a leopard, and the number of horns all point back to his hereditary characteristics as descending from Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. The indisputable fact proves that he is the fifth universal beast. For the leopard, like beast, arises out of the sea in the same manner as the four beasts before it, Daniel 7:3. Therefore, the beast of Revelation 13:1-9 is created from the result of war and commotion among the nations, in the same manner as Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. Since the evidence revealed by the symbol cannot be questioned, the leopard, like beast, assumes the period after the fall of the Imperial Rome, corresponding to the feet and toes, on and play of the great image Daniel 2. In other words, the leopard-like beast arise with the closing period represented by the first stage of the nondescript beast, while the second stage of the latter papal realm continues up to 1798. Consequently, the unfolding process of the one overlaps the downward course of the other. Unto John, the leopard-like beast was shown not in its unfolding process, but rather in its closing, out. For it says, and his deadly wound was healed. He saw in the vision the beast after the deadly wound had been healed. For he uses the past tense was, but in Daniel's vision, the work of the nondescript beast was all in the future, as said the prophet, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the sins of the Most High, and think the same times of Lord, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times of the dividing of time, Daniel 7:25. Daniel, in vision, viewed the history represented by the beast forward, while John looked backwards, or in other words, Daniel saw what the beast was to do, while John was shown what the beast had done. Okay, our next, that's the end of that study. Our next subtitle is The Crowns and the Horns of the Beast. Okay. Having seven heads and ten horns, and upon the horn ten crowns, John said, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death. For the wounded head represents the papacy, wounded by the Martin Luther, which was originally symbolized by the horned head of the nondescript beast, showing only that the papal power, that of the papal power and the authority. But the leopard like shows the papacy in her wounded state, and the imprisonment of the Pope. Thus, the two beasts, the nondescript and the leopard-like, overlap each other from one fall of the Imperial Rome to 1798. Therefore, while the nondescript beast in its second stage represents the papacy, she is secondarily described by the leopard-like for the one reveals the tyrannical authority, and the other describes her downfall. For the little horn was to have power and wear out the saints of the Most High. 1268, Daniel 7:25. But the leopard-like also opened his mouth in the blasphemy, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Revelation 13:6. For the number of the months are equivalent unto the time and time and the dividing of time. 1260 days. Or years, figuring 30 days to the month. When the imprisonment of the Pope Pius the Fifth and his death on August 19, 1799, a certain transaction occurred between the nondescript and the leopard-like beast. For the head and horns were removed from one to the other, so to speak, and making the change, the little horn, having the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things, was transposed from one horn head unto a common wounded head, showing the papacy had lost her ecclesiastical authority and was no longer represented by a horn head, combination of church and state. As that event terminated the prophetic period of the 1260 years of Daniel 7:25 and Revelation 13:5, it completely crowned the horns of the one leopard-like beast, signifying that the state is now independent of the church. The crowns on his horns denote the fall of the Roman monarchy, showing that the 10 kings, which were symbolized by the 10 horns of the nondescript beast, have received their kingdom. Okay, that's the end of that subtitle, The Crowns and the Horns. Our next subtitle now is Horns and the Heads Are All Present at the Same Time. Horns and heads all present. How John saw the beast having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns. Let us not overlook the fact that all horns, crowns, and heads are present on the beast. Therefore, whatever meaning is derived by the symbol, all must be in existence at the time of the deadly wound is healed. Had it not been so, the symbols of the heads and horns would have come one after another, as it was with the little horn and the other three that were plucked up from the nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7. It says, for a similar method is observed with the he-goat. After the notable horn, Alexander, was broken off, four came up to take its place. The four divisions of the Grisha. And after these came up, the exceeding great horn, which primarily represented Rome. Daniel 8:8-9. Where the systems and governments do not all exist at the same time, the symbols show their consecutive order. Another factor to be noted, that every symbol of the entire procession of the beast point out the facts that were to transpire within the period represented by each beast, and not one of them refers to anything in the past, save the hereditary, ancestral, and characteristics. Therefore, heads or horns have no reference and anything before or after the period represented by the beast. It is also unnatural for heads, members of the beast, to exist before or after the beast himself. Therefore, it would be inconsistent to conclude that the horns as well as the heads could denote a consecutive order of system, so long as they all appear at the time of the closing act of the beast. For the leopard-like beast in his wounded state must be intended to prophetically point out the existing condition with the great civilization. The symbol of the heads. It is impossible that both horns and heads could stand for the civil governments or king. If the horns represent the political side, then the heads cannot. John says of the leopard-like beast, "I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death." As the head that was wounded represents a religious system, then all seven must represent a religious organization. For all heads are alike, save the wound. Thus it is an unmistakable fact that the symbols are intended to reveal both the civil and the religious side of the present world. For the crowns represent civil authority, as previously explained. Had they been on the heads, like on the dragon of Revelation 12:3, they would denote that the churches are using the civil arm of the state to propagate the dogma, as in the days of the imperial and papal Rome, represented by the dragon. But since the crowns are on the horns, and the state is independent from the church, it proves the symbol by the crowns to be correct. As the facts brought forth regarding the nature of the symbols cannot be questioned, it is evident that we have a positive foundation for the application. For the leopard-like beast is a descendant of the four ancient empires. Therefore, he represents the world, but more particularly the entire Western civilization with the civil and religious system. Consequently, the heads represents Christendom only, John says. The beast having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. The fact that there is a name of blasphemy on the heads is an additional proof that they can only represent a religious organization. For blasphemy is equivalent unto hypocrisy, and hypocrisy means an attempt to mix the sacred with the common. But Yahshua says, "I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews," that is, antithetical apostolic believers of the sanctuary system, that they believe in the plan of salvation of the sanctuary system that belongs to the Adventists, but they don't really believe it. They just say they do. That's blasphemy. And are not, but are the synagogue of Satan, Revelation 2:9, or whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered unto Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme. 1 Timothy 1:20. Therefore, son of man, speak unto the house of Israel, and say unto them, thus saith the Yahweh, yet in this your fathers have blasphemed me, and that they have committed a trespass against me. Ezekiel 20:27. For iniquities and the iniquities of your fathers together, saith Yahshua, this is the Son talking of Yahweh, which have burned incense upon the mountains and blaspheme me, blaspheming Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, upon the hills. Therefore will I measure their former work into their bosom. Isaiah 65:7. Disobedience to the word of Yahweh is blasphemy. So disobedience to the word of Yahweh is blasphemy. Naturally, the question arises, who could these blasphemous denominations be? They can certainly be many. Consider the multiplicity of the sects. The prophetic word of Yahweh, speaking of this present time, says, knowing it is first that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lust, 2 Peter 3:3, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust they shall heap unto themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. What has brought the present day confusion? Because they have departed from the sound Bible truth is the only answer that can be given. Is it possible that all can be right and no two believe alike? With but one Bible, one gospel, one Yahshua, one hell to shun, and the one heaven to gain, Yahshua said, and other sheep I have which are not of this pasture, or of this fold, which them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd, John 10:16. Such satanic confusion at the present time was about to arise in the days of Paul as the Spirit of Yahweh moved upon him. He uttered the words of the sharp rebuke, now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Savior Yahshua, that you shall speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Shiloh, C-H-L-O-E, that there are contentions among you. Now this I say, that every one of you saith, I am of the Paul, and I of the Apollos, and I of the Cephas, and I of the Yahshua. And is the Yahshua divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? 1 Corinthians 1:10-13. How great the contrast between the position taken by the Spirit-filled servant of Yahweh and the present-day self-styled apostles. For Yahshua said, all these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father, nor me, John 16:3. Had all these so-called Christian leaders been led by the Spirit of Yahweh, they would imitate the example set forth by the prophets and the apostles. Then there could have been no division in the biblical truth. For the present day, the condition is indeed a blasphemy, and fulfills the words of the Master, for there shall arise false Christ and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, and submits that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect, Matthew 4:24. In view of this great confusion, there is apparent difficulty to immediately determine who is right and who is wrong. For thus he said, again I say unto you, that if two of you shall agree on the earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. Matthew 18:19. There could be nothing more pleasing unto Yahweh than for one of his children to ask in the sincerity the way of the truth. Therefore, such a one shall not be left in darkness. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7:7. If people care to find the truth, it can easily be done. But the fact of the matter is that they do not care. People would rather be deceived than to ask Yahweh to show them his truth. Yes, they pray, but their prayers are not heard, for he that turneth away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer shall be an abomination. Proverbs 28:9. The so-called Christians of this day say that the scripture as in the Old Testament and for the Jews only. We turn to the New Testament for light upon the subject. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach them so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5:19. For the honest in the heart, with surprise, hear the word from the empire scoffer of the devil. That does not mean the law of Yahweh, it is a commandment of the Yahshua. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. True. But which one of the Ten Commandments can you break and yet fulfill the commandments of Yahshua? And if you love your neighbor, will you dishonor your Yahweh the Father and not the first four trips to show honor unto Yahweh and the last six to test our love unto man, unto men? Part 2. We're going on the page 91, Two Shepherd Rod, volume, Two Shepherd Rod, and we're on page 91, second paragraph. Said to Yahshua, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Matthew 22:40. Is the begotten Son of Yahweh working in the opposition unto his Father, for the revelation of the Yahshua, which to Yahweh the Father gave unto him, to show unto him, his servants, things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John. Revelation 1:1. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of the Yahweh and the faith of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10, is a new and living way, verse 19 and 20, and Revelation 14:12. Has not Yahshua said that his saints keep the commandments of Yahweh? Again, their carnal mind raises an objection. They keep the commandments of Yahweh and not the law. But the Spirit declares, if you have respect of the person, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in any one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now if thou commit no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye, and so do as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. James 2:9-12. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. For the keeping of his commandments is a ticket to heaven. To the law and the testimony, if they speak not according unto this word, it is because there is no light in them. Isaiah 8:20. Because the carnal mind is enmity against the Yahweh, for it is not subject unto the law of Yahweh, neither indeed can be. Romans 8:7. He that saith I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. 1 John 2:4. After losing one devilish loophole, the carnal mind takes hold of another, determined to serve the devil and to deceive himself. And with his nose in the air, he utters a word. We are not to keep the law according unto the letter, but according unto the Spirit. For the letter killeth, and the Spirit giveth life. This misconception, of what truth is, leads him to believe that to keep the law according unto the Spirit, he must disregard the written word of Yahweh and keep the divine law according unto his own ways and in the harmony with his carnal mind, making void the Yahweh's own inscription. See Exodus 31:18. Exalting the finite above the infinite. What greater blasphemy can one commit? We give here a brief explanation of the subject. To keep the law according unto the letter is to build a wall around it. As the proud Pharisees did. We quote 1 John 3:15. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. Therefore, though we kill not, and yet hate our brother, we have kept the law blameless according unto the letter, but not according unto the Spirit. For the keeping of the law according unto the Spirit has a broader significance than the carnal mind can conceive. If I must keep the whole law, I must keep the whole word of Yahweh in every respect. Otherwise, I dishonor him, and would become a transgressor of the law. As a disobedient son dishonors his earthly father, and becomes guilty of the fifth commandment in the law. Are we saved by the law? No, indeed. We are judged by the law, so if we willfully disobey the word of it, we fall under the condemnation of the law. For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sin. Hebrews 10:26. But if we love the righteousness of Yahweh as expressed in his law and determined to obey his holy word wherever found, Bible or spirit of prophecy according unto the revelation by his spirit, then we receive the power which enables us to fulfill the divine purpose, and thereby our sins are blotted out by the blood of the Yahshua, and thus we are made free from the law and its condemnation, placed under or with a divine grace, or with the divine grace. For it is true that the people like to be deceived, forfeiting or flattering themselves that they are on the way to heaven. While Satan winks at their ignorance, the word of Yahweh said, and many shall follow their pernicious ways, by the reason of whom the way of the truth shall be evil spoken of. But these, as a natural brute beast, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption. 2 Peter 2:12. This proves how sectarianism sprung up, as it has been proven and generally accepted that the seven churches of the Revelation and the Seventh-day Adventist Church being the seventh one today, chapters 2 and 3 represented the history of the church and the Christian era when the Catholics took over in 538 A.D. That started the Christian era as far as the Catholics were concerned, because they adopted that word Christian and applied it to themselves and called themselves Christians so they could hide that word Catholic. It is evident that the Church of Israel overall was split into the seven sections. Okay. The Laodicean, then the last and the seventh section, is also in the danger of failing according to the testimony of the true witness. And Yahshua is the true witness, pointed out in Revelation 1:5. It says Yahshua in Revelation 3:14. So then, because thou art lukewarm and another cold in our heart, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Now this is Yahshua saying to Brother Johnson, the angel of the seventh candlestick of Gilead's seven permutations. He said, because you're not a lukewarm, cold or hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Revelation 3:16. So Yahweh, for Yahshua, has sent message after message to give light upon the written word. They were intended for the correction of the error, for the rebuking of the sin, and for the reproving of the sinner. But the leaders of each section, throughout the messages. I said, Brother Johnson was the leader of the seventh section, and the third feeding pastor of the seventh day Adventist, and the last period of the judgment of the dead for the seventh day Adventist, from 1970 to 2003. He was the last leader of that section seven, and he threw out the messages, and he has caused him to apostatize, that he grew up with and that he was given to publish in 1970, the restoration of the whole sanctuary system with the knowledge of the creation calendar and how to restore the ordained system of true worship. And he did that and published the literature and the material and sent it to the administration and said, this is what you're required to do. And he said, in other words, I'm setting the example and I'm doing it. And so since I'm the head with the voice of inspiration of Gilead Center, the last feeding pastor for the Seventh Day Adventist, so then I'm sending this message to you, and so on. So it says they were intended to correct error, rebuke sin, and for the improvement of the center, that the leader of each section throughout the messages. Okay. And the few who were willing to sacrifice all for the truth were forced to part from the churches and march on with the light. So this is who we are today here. The house of David, Gilead, we inherited the mantle from Gilead Center of Kermit, Texas, 2002. And we have marched on with the truth ever since. We're the leaders willing to correct their errors and purify the church. There would have been but one section. So, by the denial of the truth, each section cut itself off from the mighty arm of the Yahweh. But isn't that amazing? Ephesus was the first church of that seven, and Paul was the one that established that in his day. And Paul died and left it, and the Ephesus apostatized. Okay. And then the next church to come off, number two, was Smyrna, and Martin Luther was in charge of it in 1500 A.D. And he only held on to it for 43 years until 1543. And Yahweh raised up John Knox to raise up the Presbyterian Church to succeed Martin Luther. Martin Luther rejected John Knox's doctrine of the Holy Spirit. He just said, all we need is faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant. That's all we need, Romans 1:17, and we don't need no more doctrine. So the Lutheran Church rejected John Knox. And then John Knox's Presbyterian Church lasted until 1725. Now he raised up John Wesley of England with the doctrine of grace. And albeit the John Knox's Church didn't reject John Wesley. So this is how each one of these seven sections of the original Church of Israel, this is how they were sectioned out over the centuries. One rejecting the new one that would come with a new doctrine, so after theirs, they would reject it. So the new doctrine would move on with their doctrine and then repeat the same thing with their next successor. Thus, not one of these churches has had additional light on the scripture other than that which was imparted to them by the founders of each movement. For the fact proves that the prophetic word of Yahweh is correct, and the other and the older, this section is greater than condemnation. Therefore, these churches are represented by the heads, the blasphemy over them denotes their call. Should they refuse this last call also, then the revelation of these facts would be against them and will bring their final ruin. For the message regarding 144,000 and a call for a reformation presented unto the Seventh Day Adventist Church, Laodicea, in the 1930s. Now this is the seventh and last session of the spiritual Israel that started with Paul in the first century at Ephesus, was in the like manner rejected. Therefore, as the leadership of the churches, and Paul, Martin Luther, John Knox, John Wesley, Alexander Campbell, William Miller, and Ellen G. White, leadership of the churches have never accepted a message of any kind. They are certainly fulfilling the following prophecy. For the wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken, though they have rejected the word of Yahweh and what wisdom is in them. But Ellen G. White, 1844, did not reject, though, as I backtrack here a minute, William Miller's message. Matter of fact, that's what caused Ellen G. White Adventist Church to move on. It was a William Miller that rejected Ellen G. White's message of the 144,000 Antiquity of the Atonement, the cleansing of the sanctuary, January 14th, the judgment of the dead, beginning 1844. William Miller rejected that. Ellen G. White accepted William Miller's message. That's true. And Ellen G. White did not reject or apostatize from the Adventist message either. She was faithful to it. She published for 70 years for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It was a general conference that come in. Those Jesuits out of the Catholic Church come in and filtered the Adventist Church and took over the leadership of the Adventist Church. That's caused the Adventist Church membership after Sister White died in 1915 caused the laity to not to be able to make it to do anything until 1930 when the auditor brought forth out the Adventist Church and introduced who is the rod and who has appointed Michael 6-9 to the Adventist Church. It was an additional message of what they had already was given by Ellen G. White. It was the latter reign of truth. Ellen G. White was published in the former reign of truth. For the wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken low. They have rejected the word of the Yeshua, the Son of Yahweh, and what wisdom is in them. For the pastors are become brutish and have not sought the Yahshua. Therefore they shall not prosper, and all their flocks shall be scattered. Jeremiah 8:9. Jeremiah 10:21. For the seven heads of the leopard-like beast represent this mystery of the unrighteousness and hypocrisy, showing how each one fell into the trap as it came to it. Now I will say that there was at least four leaders for the Ellen G. White movement of the Seventh-day Adventist, and she was the fourth movement for Israel coming out of Egypt, and that was in Revelation 20, or Matthew 20, verse 5, where it says, the sixth and ninth hour laborer. William Miller was a sixth-hour laborer, and Ellen G. in 1833, and Ellen G. White was a ninth-hour laborer in 1844. William Miller called at the end of the sixth-hour work the seventh and eighth and ninth parabolic hours on the parabolic time clock. Ellen G. White picked up the tenth parabolic hour, and she only worked in the tenth parabolic hour. For the 10th parabolic hour reached up to 1970. Rhoda Johnson worked in the 11th parabolic hour in 1970-2003. And then when the 11th parabolic hour was over in 2003, Yahweh called me to work in the 12th parabolic hour that we've been in since 2002 at the Passover. So he said, therefore, since Luther's time and on, Yahweh permitted that his people should be cast out by the Satan's flood, the unconverted. Thus, he has been telling his church from one movement to another. So we've had, there's been five distinct movements then for Israel, starting with Moses in 1500 B.C. coming out of Egypt with Yahshua, that rock in the cloud. I went with Moses down to Egypt to deliver the children of Israel. And Yahshua stayed with Moses and the children of Israel for 40 years in the wilderness. He was the one in that cloud on a day-by-day basis, instructing Moses of what to say and what to do each day. And when they move on from one place to another, though, therefore they who lower the standard and refuse to reform at the sounding of the trumpet. People don't realize it, but the seventh trumpet sounded in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Okay. Are the very one who caused division in the church of the other. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them that cause the divisions and offenses contrary unto the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For they that or such serve not Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, but their own belly, and by their good words and fair speeches, deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16, 17, and 18. Since the history of the church is said, and the last section, Laodicea, Seventh-day Adventist, and they had the fourth movement, and there was one more movement to go that succeeded the fourth movement, and that was the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven now, is finally connected up in 2003 at the Passover at Gilead Center with the fourth movement. So the fifth movement connected up with Rhoda Johnson, Elijah David, and closing the sixth seal and opening up the seventh seal, Revelation 8, 1. And so he said the latest sin, closing out the fourth movement, is in a worse condition and under greater condemnation than any previous one. Okay, and so what were the previous ones? There was Ephesus, Smyrna, there was Pergamos, and there was Alexander Campbell, the Baptist, represented by Sardis, and there's William Miller, 1833, and the Millerite movement, and which was the Philadelphian church, and then there was the seventh one, Ellen G. White, the Seventh Day Adventist church. Okay. So all the churches are accounted for up to 1844. Now the seraphim are supposed to come on and purify and set the everlasting kingdom of David. And Yahshua had to come and do that himself in 2002 at Corner, Texas. Close out the fourth movement and open up the fifth movement with Elijah David. That's the 20 verse 6, the fifth group of laborers. That's who we are today. And as there is no time left for the calling out of a new movement, now Ethiopia didn't know this. He didn't know how to read that parabolic time clock from Matthew 20, verse 1 through 6. He didn't know how to do that. He called Adventist Church the last movement. And it was the fourth movement. There's still one more movement left. And that was Matthew 20, verse 6, laborers. Because the Adventist movement is Matthew 20, verse 5 at the ninth hour. The fifth movement, the last one, is Matthew 20, verse 6 at the 11th hour. At the end of the 11th hour, to work in the 12th hour. Then a message of the amazing light and stern rebuke to the word of Yahweh with the manifestations of the divine judgment is the only remedy that can bring to the true conversion and reformation. Thus preparing a church to stand without the spot, wrinkle, or any such thing of which only can be said, and the dragon was wroth with the woman and the church as a body, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keepeth the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of believing in the faith, having faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10 and Revelation 12:17. It is the purity of the everlasting kingdom that the Father sent His Son Yahshua to set up according to that prophecy of Daniel 2:44 and 45, in the last days, in the days of these kings. It is the purity of I'll read it this way, for it is the purifying of the Seventh-day Adventist Church by producing the first fruits harvest of 144,000 that incurs the wrath of the dragon. That's the way that should have been written. Now, these seven churches, Adventist Church being the seventh one, were also symbolized by the seven candlesticks and the leadership of the same seven churches by the seven angels appointed in charge of those seven candlesticks. And Brother Johnson was the last one appointed unto this seventh candlestick, LLC, and that was at Kermit, Texas, from 1970 to 2002. So we read, for the mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks, for the seven stars are the angels, or the prophets appointed in charge of that candlestick that has the seven lamps on it burning, showing present and perpetual truth continually burning every day. Seven churches and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches, Revelation 1:20. And unto the angel of the church of the Laodicean write, Revelation 3:14. Note the message is addressed unto the angel leadership, not to the candlestick, the church as a body. Therefore, the condemnation is not unto the candlestick, the church as a body, but unto the angel, the the lukewarm prophet pointed as this leader and this voice and inspiration, because I says this is the prophet token to the candlestick of the seven of the brother son, because thou says I am rich and increased with good and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:17, my brethren, this is not against you, for it is Yahshua speaking, who died for you, but it will be if you change not your course of the action. If Yahshua, by sending these seven churches in a group of the seven candlesticks, and giving the blackest record unto the last one, and that would be Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, Brother Johnson, as the one that was an angel in charge of that candlestick, could represent the last feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist. So Brother Johnson was responsible for the rise and the fall of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. If Brother Johnson had repented when I gave him that message July the 14th, 2002, and did what I told him, that message from heaven told him to do, then he would have brought the freedom of the Adventist Church. He'd have brought the perfection and the purification of the Adventist Church. It's 144,000 coming forth at that time. He is not calling to lay the sin fathom. And neither is the interpretation of the head doing so. It is not because the lay of the sin said that the Adventists are better than they, that they are not called Babylon, for their record is worse, but it is to show that on account of their increased light, he is to deal differently with them. It is to prove that if the angel, the last angel of the seventh candlestick, led us here in Turner, Texas, the leadership of Gilead Center of the led us here, should reject the message of the true witness, and Brother Johnson did. The true witness is Yahshua himself. He cannot call the 144,000. Brother Johnson told me in 1970. The voice spoke to him and told him that the 144,000 has been consigned to his church. And so he says that we are the ones that are going to meet the 144,000 when it's time for them to come forth. He told me that in 1970. The Brother Johnson was cut off in 2003. He cannot call the 144,000 out from the midst of them into another movement. And that's exactly what the Bible does. The Bible calls the 144,000 out of the fourth movement for Israel, the Adventist Church. And they're the ones that are leading the fifth movement with the house of David. They're the ones working as ministers in the fifth movement. But you see where Vicky Hotta, he was short on inspiration here, because he didn't know how to read the periodic time clock no more than anybody else before him. Just read that again. It is to prove that the angel, Brother Eddie Johnson, the last angel of the seventh candlestick, the leadership of the Adventist Church, should reject the message of the true witness of Yahshua, Revelation 1:5 and 3:14. He rejected that message of the true witness of Revelation 3:14. For the true witness counseled of him to buy him gold, silver, and fire, so that he be not found naked. He cannot call the 144,000 now. So if Brother Johnson rejects that message of the true witness, he can't call the 144,000 now from the midst of them into another movement. Now, by the call of Revelation 18, come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, and that ye received not the plagues, Revelation 18:4, but rather by the message of Revelation 7 and Ezekiel 9, thus speedily releasing his people and quickly finished the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the short work will Yahshua make upon the earth, Romans 9:28.